Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. SNU provides each of our listeners with current information on a wide variety of topics related to health, athletic performance, fitness, and nutrition. On track one, Corey will provide his commentary adapted from the Certified Sports Nutrition Advisor Education Program, current research data, and his clinical experience. On track two, he will be joined by Tracy Hawley on He Said, She Said, for her female focus on topics related to whole food, health, relationships, and raising healthy children. Track 3 features an interview with our special guest, who will share their expertise and experience in the healthcare, fitness, and sports nutrition field. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 9, Number 3. In the last edition of SNU, I talked about the concept of cheating, as in cheating on your diet. Many nutrition experts today promote a lifestyle of dietary cheating. To them, all of whom I assume are cheating themselves, say it's a means of release, or they say that being too strict causes binging. The idea is that one extreme leads to the other, but in this regard, I totally disagree. Cheating on your diet is no different than cheating on an exam, cheating at cards, or cheating on your husband or wife. The consequences in principle are no different. Cheating, by the way, means you're violating the very standard that you have created in order to improve or manage your health. So when you cheat, you're letting your health slip away. Cheating anytime, anywhere, seldom brings us closer to the enlightened path of health and wellness. Cheating, like health and marriage, at least to me, is a state of mind. Let's keep in mind, then, that as adults, we can do pretty much anything you want. You can cheat anytime you want. You can eat anything you want, but that's not the point. The point is, why are you cheating? Why do you think it's cheating? That means if you think it's cheating, you're aware of something better. See, everyone else, what we think of cheating, thinks that's normal. They're not at the place they need to be, because it's obvious to me, and I think everyone else that's into the science, that the way people are eating is synonymous with causing premature death and a widespread amount of unnecessary disease and lack of function. But what is the benefit, really, when it comes down to cheating? Many of us use food to pacify emotions, while others simply give in to the temptation of their own lust. But regardless of the reason, the bottom line is that we are defined by our actions. The body itself is unaware of why we do what we do. It simply adapts to what we do. Like when we get too much light, we get a burn. When we eat the wrong food, it's going to burn us. It's going to burn a hole inside of us. So it's obvious by examining the health of the entire nation that we ourselves are part of and live in, that cheating has now become the rule as opposed to the exception. So why don't you yourself become the exception? Why don't you make a stand? Why don't you stand out as somebody who's not prepared to compromise diet because you understand the science of nutrition? Now, in this edition of SNU, I'd like to talk about constipation, fiber, and what I call the art of pooping. Constipation is defined as having a bowel movement fewer than 3 times per week. I mean, the thought of that, just, I can't even believe that. With constipation, stools are usually hard, dry, small in size, and difficult to eliminate. Some people who are constipated find it really painful to have a bowel movement and often experience straining, bloating, and a terrible sensation of a full bowel. They just build it up inside and it's like they're ready to explode, but nothing comes out. That must be a horrible feeling. Constipation is a symptom, not a disease. Almost everyone experiences constipation at some point in their life, and a poor diet is almost always the reason why. Most constipation is temporary and not serious. Understanding its causes, prevention, and treatment will help most people find relief. Getting back to the idea of cause and effect here. Common causes of constipation include a lack of dietary fiber and physical activity, the use of numerous medications, milk and dairy product consumption, irritable bowel syndrome, changes in life or routine, such as pregnancy, aging, and travel, laxative abuse, ignoring the urge to have a bowel movement, dehydration, certain diseases, problems with the colon and rectum, problems with intestinal function, and emotional stress plays a big role. Body type and metabolic rate is certainly a factor, as I have yet to meet an ectomorph that suffers with chronic constipation. They can't even relate to that because they often go 2, 3, 4 times a day. It seems that the physiology of an endomorph, somebody with a very slow metabolic rate, precludes itself to constipation, as does any individual with an underactive thyroid. As a matter of fact, one of the symptoms of an underactive thyroid is chronic constipation. Now, in rural Africa and in most underdeveloped third world countries, where much of the food eaten is in the form of minimally processed starchy staple carbohydrates, such as legumes and lentils, and root vegetables like potatoes or yams, approximately 1 pound, or about 400 to 500 grams of soft stool, is evacuated by an adult daily. But in striking contrast, adults on a modern Western diet usually pass on average about a quarter as much as this, or about 80 to 100 grams of firm, hard stool. So the difference is that the fiber consumers have soft stool and it's voluminous. Those who lack fiber and eat refined food have a hard stool, a small stool, and they almost always strain. So in North America, if the average amount of stool passed per day is about 100 grams, then based on our current life expectancy of around 80 years, the average so-called civilized human body dispenses approximately 36,500 grams of stool per year, which equates to about 3 million grams in a lifetime and or of just over 3 tons. So you can be defined by what you eliminate and the amount of what you eliminate. Dr. Dennis Burkett, author of Eat Right to Stay Healthy and Enjoy Life More, calls varicose veins a pressure disorder. He classifies them as a disease related to abdominal straining in the evacuation of stool. Straining at stool, says Dr. Burkett, is a characteristic feature of our Western way of life. The usual way to pass stool until a century and a half ago was to squat. Squatting actually protects the rectum and bowel from damage, forces a natural evacuation of stool, and diverts most of the pressure away from the rectum towards and through the muscles of the legs, core, and butt. So just get down into a squatting position and try this sometime. You'll see that there's a natural feeling or a sensation to evacuate the waste from inside your body in that position, and that most of the pressure, instead of being centered through you, is centered around your muscles and core, which is why the so-called squatting method does not lead to a lot of the damage that people who sit on the john normally experience, especially when they're straining without their muscles taking the brunt of the strain. Of course, modern man prefers to sit, for he knows that he will probably have to wait a long time before stool is passed. A magazine rack in any bathroom is a telltale sign of constipation. You go into someone's house and there's a magazine rack there, you know they got constipation. Elimination of stool in terms of time should be similar to performing a set of squats in the gym. Quick, fast, ready to go. As soon as you sit or squat to eliminate, the evacuation of body waste should take place almost immediately without any straining, and you should be in and out of the washroom in 1 to 2 minutes maximum. Now, that is not the usual experience of most people in North America. Sometimes they'll go in there and you wonder what the heck they're doing in there. Okay, after working for nearly 20 years as a surgeon in a teaching hospital in East Africa, Dr. Burkett says that straining is caused primarily by chronic constipation induced through a lack of sufficient fiber, water, and routine physical activity, and the overconsumption of refined processed food, principally in the form of sugar and white flour. Related pressure disorders caused by constipation and straining include hiatus hernia, hemorrhoids, diverticulosis, and appendicitis, all of which often prelude bowel cancer and coronary artery disease. So constipation and straining at stool is a definite red flag and much more serious than what convention would have us believe. Now let's talk about fiber. Plant fibers attract and hold water and give bulk to food residues in the small intestine. This shortens the transit time of waste destined for disposal. Fiber also modifies glycemic index of carbohydrate sugars. For example, the glucose derived from processed white sugar is absorbed much more rapidly into the bloodstream than glucose derived from buckwheat groats or yams or old-fashioned steel-cut oatmeal. Hence, the net effect on insulin release is less pronounced. Fiber is classified as water-soluble, such as pectin and guar gum, or water-insoluble, such as cellulose, hemicellulose, lignins, and wheat bran. 30 grams per day is suggested as a guideline, but there's no official RDA or RNI. It hasn't been determined because fiber actually, unlike the knowledge of most people, is not essential. There's no minimum amount recommended, but the stuff can be extremely beneficial. Think of this. Stool tends to float when fiber is consumed in adequate amounts, or sink if it is not. Now, this is what we taught our children from the age of a toddler. We taught them to look and examine their stool and understand the relationship of their stool to health. And when there's problems pooping, there's problems with the diet, problems with emotions, problems with life. So you can gauge your life and health by how you poop. So as the saying goes, if your stool floats, it's clear sailing. But if it sinks, you're sunk. Bowel movement should be frequent, no less than 1 to 2 times per day, believe it or not. Stool should be large in volume, its thickness approaching the size of your wrist, and its length should be ideally equal to the distance between your wrist and elbow. Now, when's the last time you had that type of conversation over dinner? Not very often do people even talk about this, and in fact, some of the older generation finds the topic disgusting, and they themselves are the ones that have the worst problems with constipation because they don't know how to talk about it. Average intake of fiber in North America is about 8 to 12 grams daily, which is grossly inadequate. Now, I mentioned this already, but fiber is not classified as essential, like carbs. Carbs are not essential, but they can be extremely beneficial. Fiber is an important bulking agent that aids in the systematic elimination of waste through the intestinal tract. Fiber, or roughage, is a form of carbohydrate. It's the indigestible portion of plants that generally resists the action of digestive enzymes in single-stomach animals, like us. However, it is now understood that through the action of certain bacteria in the large intestine, fiber can be modified and converted into short-chain fatty acids, such as acetic, propionic, and butyric acids, that acidify the colon contents, resulting in water retention and fecal bulking. It's very important to have a bulky fecal matter, because that's what prevents straining, and that's what allows an increased transit time. That means it goes through you faster. Fiber can also yield a small amount of caloric value once metabolized, and these acids that are produced are highly beneficial, by the way. Sources of insoluble fiber include fruits, vegetables, dried beans, wheat bran, seeds, popcorn, brown rice, and whole grain products such as breads, cereals, and pasta. Soluble fiber is found in fruits such as apples, oranges, pears, peaches, and grapes, and also in vegetable seeds, oat bran, dried beans, oatmeal, barley, and rye, and of course prunes provide a high source of soluble fiber. Fiber can be useful in weight management, as it greatly improves the transit time of waste through the colon, modifies the glycemic index of food and provides the sensation of fullness when eating. Fiber has been called the Weight Watcher's dream, as cellulose and hemicellulose take up space in the stomach, making us feel full. But adding a fiber supplement to a crappy diet is not the answer. So you got to clean up the diet and make sure that the food itself that you're eating is fibrous, and also at the same time, you have to eliminate the foods that are causing the problem. Now, normally, the sensation of fullness brings food consumption to a halt. Therefore, food intake is less, and this is where fiber acts as a benefit. You eat a lot of fiber-less food, you're going to end up eating a lot more of it. When it comes to eating, high-fiber food simply slows us down. Compare the weight and density of white bread to a really heavy black rye. When it comes to elimination, fiber speeds you up. It's that simple. Low-fiber diets are typically high in fat and sugar and are associated with constipation and many gastrointestinal diseases. And as mentioned, that leads to cancer, heart disease, diabetes, syndrome X, and obesity. For the bowels to work properly, a lifelong daily intake of 25 to 30 grams, or about 1 ounce of dietary fiber daily, is required. But that's just a minimum. Most of us would do much better with much more, like the Africans, getting up into the 100, 150, 200 grams a day. Then you're going to see some serious bowel movement activity on a daily basis, and that's going to be highly beneficial, because if you retain your waste, you will get sick. After the digestion of all proteins, fats, and carbs, and the absorption of water and all other nutrients in the small intestine, the colon, which is the last 5 feet of the intestinal tract, receives approximately 1 pint of liquid stool together with the undigested fiber. Under normal circumstances, the colon gradually removes the remaining water and forms a shaped stool that moves toward the rectum as a result of gentle pressure waves, known as peristalsis. If the diet lacks sufficient fiber, the stool becomes hard, dry, and small. A soft, bulky stool can move relatively quickly through the intestinal tract, whereas a hard, dry stool tends to clump up and adhere to the inner dry wall of the colon, forcing the colon to generate high-pressure waves to move the waste out. Over time, the colon loses the capacity to generate these high-pressure waves, and you'll see this is more common in the elderly. It can also become distorted in shape, lose flexibility, and become flaccid and non-functional. And that's when we start seeing people becoming dependent on laxatives. Eventually, the colon requires assistance to push along the hard, dry stool, and the abdominal muscles begin to contribute the necessary force. This is what straining is all about. Now, core training is paramount to internal intestinal health. Contracting, rotating, and bending the muscle fibers throughout the entire region of the midsection causes internal compression of the stomach and the intestines, forcing food and waste matter to move along more efficiently. Digested food is also absorbed from the intestinal lumen into the body more efficiently. So in my mind, when I'm doing my core, I'm thinking evacuation of waste, elimination of toxins. It's not just for the muscles of that region. I also do a lot of twisting, bending, and a whole variety of core activity. And to me, it's about the elimination of waste. Because as a naturopath, I've learned about the connection between constipation and premature death. Waste and toxic chemicals retained in the body through overeating and inactivity cause the body to decay and degenerate, clog the pipes, and everything backs up. It's just like a sink or a toilet. Every channel of elimination must remain open and clear to facilitate removal of waste, allowing the body to function with high energy and optimum health. The bowels in particular must be evacuated at least twice daily, or the body will become a cesspool, an inevitable feeding ground for pathogenic bacteria and harmful microorganisms. Now here's an analogy. If garbage from our home is not removed routinely and efficiently, and we all know how important it is to remove the garbage from your home, that relates to the science of hygiene and sanitation. If you don't remove the garbage, it starts to attract insects and vermin, which infest, multiply, and spread disease. In time, if left unattended, The garbage itself also begins to deteriorate, becoming a source of putrefying rot and contagious pathogens which proliferate and spread. So the insects and pathogens don't cause the garbage to collect in the first place. They simply take advantage of it because they're opportunistic. The same is also true for the waste we generate inside our bodies. It isn't caused by the parasites, germs, and bacteria, but they will thrive on it if it builds up inside of us. Ultimately, the cause of the waste is the waste you're putting in. I mean, if the food that most people ate actually tasted the way it would taste without all the food coloring and food preservatives and flavoring and dyes and chemicals, they'd choke on it. It would taste horrible. So we are misled into thinking that the food supply that we have access to is actually food. Health is absolutely related to the environment that we create and manage inside our own body. So remember this saying, if it goes in soft, it comes out hard. And it's as simple as that. Think of this the next time you see someone eating a submarine sandwich loaded with mayonnaise or a greasy, gooey hamburger. Man, it tastes good, but think of the pain that you're going to experience when you have to eliminate that stuff. Thousands of processed foods now dominate the grocery shelves of almost every supermarket in America. Oh, and one more thing, gentlemen. During this fundamental procedure that we call going to the washroom or the biffy, don't forget, number one, the courtesy flush. Number two, baby wipes for a good clean. Number three, a natural air freshener spray. And four, a thorough hand wash. And I can't tell you how many guys don't wash their hands after doing their thing in the bathroom. And you know what? We'll never know what's going on inside that room with the door closed. So adults and parents, you have got to teach your children how to poop properly. Okay, well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's an anonymous quote from the infinite world of the internet. Constipated people don't give a crap.